Reynolds, who have not finished races well in the past, are going to do it today. Here they come another time.
Welcome to F1WP.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program.
I've been a fun fan for years.
F1WP.com podcast.
We're going to do tire changes maybe next year. I think we can.
Hi, this is Desiree. I'm your fabulous, fierce female Formula One fan.
Welcome to F1WP.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1,115, October 6th, 2025, Stephen.
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads bring you the F1Weekly.com web server for the ads that interest you. From Ferrari jackets to Renault hats, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. On today's program, George keeps Max behind for a well-deserved victory for Mercedes. Oscar finally coming out of his shell after banging wheels with his loving teammate Norris. And Fernando getting awfully irritated with these young hero rookies. And this week in the Nasser Hamid Corner, we have French driving sensation Loic Duval and a discussion about the 2021 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix finished. Yes, this was a big deal for Nasser, and the banter is outstanding. And yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the donation tab. You know, you'll want to. So there you have it. George gets his really important, well-timed victory in one hell of a hot Grand Prix. And it was well-deserved. He did a better job than Max at the start and kept Max at bay. And that takes a certain level of talent. Very impressive. Toto was very, very happy that weekend. Antonelli finishing fifth. But outstanding work over at McLaren. Yes, the fairness question lurking as Piastri and Norris duel for second and third. Norris avoiding Max Verstappen, honestly, obviously, but banging wheels with Piastri, and Piastri was not very happy about it, questioning the fairness of Norris's drive. So it was very interesting. Now that can of worm is open, and you cannot put it back in the toothpaste tube. So I thought it was a great Grand Prix. Fernando Alonso getting really irritated more and more, I notice, in these Grand Prix. The age, the grumpy old man, all that is going to be bubbling up to the top, and it's embarrassing. But the humidity in Singapore always tells me, why are we even raced there? Now, of course, I know it's for the big dollars. Singapore pays millions for this. But boy, the sweltering heat has to be brutal. And apparently Max Verstappen doesn't like the cooling vests. They are a bit archaic. The tubes have been around for a long, long time. So now we take a small break. We go back to Austin, Texas, which is a lot more fun. And it's a little drier than Singapore. So well done to Mercedes. Everybody won't admit it, but a lot of teams are still developing the 2025 car. And Red Bull admits to it, saying that their effort there might hurt the 2026 operations. But keeping Max at the front keeps them happy and calm. So it is worth the sacrifice. So there you have it. Max finishing two is big ahead of the McLarens, but He now says that he has no chance. It's just too big of a margin. But that depends. We still need another McLaren taking each other out moment. There could still be kablamos of the Mercedes as these motors get old towards the end of the season. So we have a lot of action. And now the best part is Piastri is no longer on Lando Norris's bowling team. He's irked, he's irritated, and now we're going to get some testicular fortitude out of the young man. So this is good for Formula One. It's actually good for Oscar Piastri. Getting pissed off is always a good beginning. Look how much Max does it. He uses it as a tool. So there you have it, and there you go. And don't forget, Nasser Hamid Corner this week, we have French driving sensation, Loïc Duval. Great race driver, endurance racing, sports cars. Great discussion with Nasser. And of course, we have the topic of the 2021 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Lots of giggling from Nasser Hamid. So please enjoy, and we'll talk to you next week. Nats, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, I am doing very good, and I am not surprised that Mr. Carlos Ghosn has bailed out of Japan, apparently hidden in a musical instrument box. But today I read that he actually walked out of his home because the Nissan security people dropped surveillance, who knows why. And then he took the bullet train and went to this area where VIPs hop on a flight. And the Turkish company that transported him, they are also in hot water. And now Japan has issued a red alert. Interpol, they are trying to get his booty back in Nihon. What say you?
Absolutely fascinating. I love every minute of this, but you have to give it to Japan. I mean, he was under house arrest. First, he was imprisoned for a long time in their local Mayberry RFD jail cell. Then they finally let him have some freedom. He was under house arrest at his beautiful home in Japan, but it was just too much for him. He couldn't take it because this man, we have to remember, has multiple homes all over the world and was always free and ready to exploit all that money that he had for years and years. And let's not forget, too, that the reason why Renault was allowed to come back to Formula One was Carlos Ghosn. And this man, I don't know what happened, but now he's a fugitive. He's a man on the run. I would keep an eye out for Flavio Briatore. Somewhere around Sardinia, you may see Carlos Ghosn on his yacht in a mankini.
Well, I just wonder if he was listening to Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy while he was hiding in that, allegedly hiding in that musical box. So shall we play the interview now and take a break?
Let's do it. Let's bring in Loïc Duval.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Daytona with Loïc Duval. First, how are you and did I get your name correct?
Yeah, I mean, quite perfect. I'm good, thank you. Happy to be here. It's always early in the season to be back in Daytona for the roar, but you know, there's a great opportunity and challenge ahead of us. So I mean, it's quite cool to be here with JDC and Mustang Sampling, you know, all together with the Cadillac. So I'm really looking forward to this new opportunity.
Great. Now, you have race winning experience here in the US. What is your impression of American tracks and racing scene?
I mean, I think most of the guys are feeling the same way. I mean, here in the U.S., it's all tracks, you know, feeling, you know, kind of bumpy, not so much safety as you can have in Europe or stuff like that. And it's kind of pure racing. So this is the kind of tracks who gave us the feeling, you know, of pushing the limits, and that's also why we become as kids fan of motorsports, is because of these kind of tracks that that there is no way to escape. You just have to push as hard as possible, and if you make a mistake, you pay it straight away. So I mean, and the racing itself, you know, it's always a great show. Here in the US, you know, you always fight until the end, so you never give up from lap one to the checkered flag. So yeah, it's a great mentality of racing.
Great. Okay, your nation is the birthplace of Grand Prix racing and also famous for Le Mans. How did you develop interest in motor racing?
It comes from my father. I mean, he was doing motocross when he was younger, and he did put me on a bike also. And I was doing quite okay, but crashing pretty often. And then he decided to stop and to try four wheels with a go kart, and that's the way we went, you know. I mean, and then you do some laps, you know, on a racetrack which is close to your home, and then you start to do some races, and you know, I mean, and you go into it, and for sure as a kid, you know, to have this feeling, you know, of speed, of being so close to the floor, side by side with some other guys, and also back in the days, you know, I mean, F1 in Europe was so big, you know, with Prost and Senna and this kind of stuff. So, you know, you start to dream about being a racing driver.
Now, you mentioned karting. How long were you in karting, and any young drivers you raced against who went on to a lot of success like yourself?
I did race too long in karting, you know. Back in the days, I think I did my first car racing. I was something like 19. And now at 19 years old, you're already in Formula One. So probably a bit too long, but also I didn't have money, you know, to be able to step up in race cars. So it was definitely a good experience, you know, probably the best to become racing driver for sure. And yeah, I mean, a lot of guys I've been racing against, you know, Hamilton, Rosberg, Kubica, you know, all those guys are my generation, and I've been racing against them in go-kart, or also Rossi, Maya Lopez, maybe a little bit of Alonso and Vettel, and I mean, all those guys basically.
Yeah, you race against Hamilton in Formula 3. Going back to those days, was his talent really apparent, that he was something special in those days?
I think, you know, he always been really competitive, you know, and for sure super talented guy, also smart, but he also went every year in the best team, you know. I mean, it was planned that these guys go to F1, and he had all the resources. I mean, when he made it in car racing, probably not in go-kart because he's not coming from a rich family. But when he's been signed by McLaren, you know, when he went in Formula Renault in England and Formula 3 in Europe, in GP2, he always been in the best team. So that doesn't make the... And it does make a little bit the life easier, yeah. But still you have to make it happen, and he made it every single year, you know. So for sure he had probably the best package, but he was part of the best package, and you know, I think this success in those series made him also so strong in Formula One, because mentally nobody has been able to beat him. And that makes also a sportsman, you know. When you feel good mentally, and when you are so strong, it's already a big part in the pocket.
In 2003, you won the French Formula Renault Championship. What were the highs and lows of the season that you remember?
I think the lows had been the beginning of the year, you know, one or two races where I didn't put everything together. We were performing, but I didn't score the points I wanted. But then most of it has been quite high, you know. At that time you join Formula Renault, you're fighting against some guys who have experience. My teammate was Patrick Pillet at that time. In Formula Renault, I was fighting against Simon Pagenaud. He was doing his second year, I was in my first year, and I won the championship. So, you know, I mean, when you do that, for sure, there is much more high than lows. And I have to say that it was a great timing. Again, I was in the right team at the right time, and I did well. And then I've been able to win the championship. But this, for sure, became the moment where I thought, maybe I can do something in motorsports.
Okay. Now, something you did was test Formula One machinery in, I believe, 2004. How was that experience of driving a Formula One car? And even more important, did Flavio try to sign you to his management contract?
It's a kind of dream come true, but I have to say that the first laps, you believe that Formula One is not made for you because it's so quick, you know. You end up so quick in the corners, the braking is so impressive and so strong. So, but then you get used to it. It's something really, really special. And back in the days, I was there with Renault as a French driver. Flavio, for sure, was the man, you know. Organizing everything at that time and with his management structure, it didn't work out unfortunately in a way, but that's the way it is. You know, you have to put a lot of things together to go to F1. On top of being competitive, sometimes you have to be to get the good support, to have the right nationality at the right time and this kind of stuff. So it's difficult to say, but at the end I'm still super happy about, you know, the career, even though I didn't make it into F1 back in those days. Experience in Japan was great, to come back in Europe with Audi and to Le Mans and stuff like that. It's in something I could not really expect as a kid, so I'm still super happy about the career I've had.
Talking of Japan, what made you switch to Japan and how much did you enjoy racing there?
Basically, after Macau in Formula 3, I didn't know what would go on with Renault. I mean, I had an opportunity with them and they were buying me a seat in GP2, but with a team that I believe was not the right one, and I didn't want to end up, you know, doing 1 year in GP2 and not doing well and then to be dropped from the program. So in the meantime, I had the opportunity in Japan to do a two championship, the Formula Nippon and the Super GT, so super competitive cars, and to get paid also, which when you start racing, the first goal, I mean, for sure it's to go to F1, but if you can earn money from your passion, it's something really great, you know. And I got this opportunity. It was also with Honda, which was in Formula One. So back in the days, I know that if I could win the Super Formula Championship, maybe I had a way to go back to F1 with Honda. Unfortunately, when I won the championship, is the year that Honda stopped Formula One. So it didn't work out.
Have you developed taste for sushi and tempura?
I'm a big fan of it. Big, big fan of it.
Okay, that's good. Okay, what is more important and dear to you, winning the Le Mans 24 Hours in 2013 or the WEC Championship?
A lot of people are asking. I think they go really all together. For sure, Le Mans, it's a big race. And to win it, as also with Tom and Alan, you know, which they've done so much for endurance racing, it was something really, really special. But also being world champion in your sport, it's also something important. You know, I mean, few days ago, few weeks ago, we've been introduced on the Hall of Fame at the FIA. You know, as world champion, not at Le Mans, as Le Mans winners, but at world champion, and being in the Hall of Fame, you know, it's also something quite prestigious. So it's difficult to say which one for sure. Yeah, if I have to pick up one first, it's Le Mans, because this race is unique and there is so much heritage and a legacy about this race. But also to be world champion, it's something really special for a human being.
Okay. Now, things happen fast in racing. You had a massive crash at Le Mans in 2014. Can you share with us what you remember?
Nothing, unfortunately. I'm sorry, but what I remember is when I left the hotel in the morning and when I wake up at the hospital the day after. Even though I was awake after the crash, I don't remember anything. I know a few things, you know, about what I was talking about and stuff like that, and always saying the same things, you know, minutes after minutes, and switching off and then restarting and switching off. But now, I don't remember anything. What I can say also from the data is that we don't think anything major, you know, any problem with the car. But also, I was not quicker this lap than another lap. So it's difficult to say. Either it was something on the track, either I put my wheels on the grass, either I had something with the car, but I cannot guide anyone in the direction because I don't remember anything. So, and in a way, luckily for me also, you know, when you don't have a souvenir of such a crash, I think, you know, you don't think about it. And that's also positive for a driver, you know, not to have something, you know, in your mind always telling you that be careful, be cautious and stuff like that. It's quite positive also in a way that I don't remember anything.
Okay, that's good. Final question. Who will be the first French world champion since Monsieur Prost, Esteban Ocon or Pierre Gasly?
As long as they are in their team right now, I think none of them can be world champion. I think they have the talent and they can do, you know. But right now, unfortunately, in F1, if you don't have a Mercedes logo or maybe a Ferrari, Red Bull can help, you know, let's say in the future. But with Renault and Toro Rosso, there is no way that they can be world champion. But I hope one of them will become world champion, whatever the car they will drive.
Okay. Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Thank you so much.
Thanks
man.
A lot.
I really appreciate
bye,
it.
Thank you.
Nas, I know you're excited to start blowing the horns of triumph for El Max Verstappen. Now, the 2021 World Campione.
Well, Mr. Rogers, the issue is not with Max Verstappen, world champion. The issue is not Lewis Hamilton not breaking Michael Schumacher's record. But the real issue is talk about the last tango on the last lap in Abu Dhabi, played wonderfully by Mike Massey. And you're a man of music. I am sure you remember Barry White had his Love Unlimited Orchestra. Well, Massey has his own Inconsistency Unlimited Orchestra, which has reached the new heights in chart topping. Okay, and we all knew something was going to happen in the season finale. This has been going on all season long between two of the greatest racing talents of all time, not just Formula One. But what we saw was beyond Hollywood and Netflix script, and a lot of people are unhappy the way it was handled. I think that's where the real issue is. Let's hear what you have to say.
Completely and utterly mind-blowing. I mean, for me, I mean, my mind just went boom! What? And it became the Massey World Championship. And it's not just this race, but other races. The weird decision-making. The strange decision-making on the first lap. I mean, everybody's going, well, he's got to give the place back. But apparently, this is a new world order. And the anti-vaxxers probably think it's their fault. But I'm telling you, this was totally unbelievably bizarre, but so exciting at the same time. It was terribly addicting. Oh my God, the adrenaline. No, it was unbelievable. But we knew something crazy was going to happen. And boom. We all have to thank Latifi.
Yes, I think, you know, on Christmas Day, he's going to see a big Heineken truck in front of his house with, you know, thank you note from Jos.
For sure.
When, you know, all is said and done, my two UAE dirhams are the most deserving driver of the race did not win the race, but the most deserving driver of the season, and this is just my humble opinion, did win the championship, plus the race in very bizarre circumstances. You know, Max did win more races than Lewis. He led more laps than any other driver this season. So this is not a situation where somebody was just cruising and collecting. I mean, he is the ultimate hustler. So I take comfort in that as bad as that decision was, which I absolutely do not like, and it ruined the whole thing for me. And again, it's the way it was done, not because Max won or Lewis lost. But at least, you know, a very, very deserving driver won. And I'm very happy that Honda goes out on a high. And as I mentioned to you, I'm a big Honda fan. And I'm actually a fan of all companies that dedicate their time and resources in Formula One. So there is happiness there. There's no question about it. And, you know, also, if you look at it, as they say, the championship won is won over a period of whole season, not just one race. Max lost a lot of points at Silverstone and lost a certain victory and minimum 25 points in Baku. So all these things are very comforting to know that the title has gone to a very, very deserving driver. On the other hand, before Latifi left the track, LCH was put in a trick bag by Max and Red Bull to win the last four races to win title number 8. And he almost pulled it off. LCH was able to get the jump on Max at the start, and despite being on red tires at the start, Max was not able to pass Lewis, and that was vintage Lewis. The only thing left for Red Bull and Max was what Christian Horner during the race called, "We need a miracle," and Mike Massey delivered there. So he is now the Helen Keller of motorsports, the miracle worker. But, you know, I'll tell you, the start for Lewis was so good. I really, really thought he jumped the start, and I was expecting that there will be a, you know, start under investigation. So that, you know, so we had a great race, and Lewis Hamilton, man, had Max Verstappen and Red Bull covered every which way. And the way the race ended is just very, very sad. This kind of stuff should not happen at the top end of any professional sports, not just Formula One. My first reaction when the safety car came out, and you know, I watch a lot of races, Formula 4, Formula 3, you know, Italian Formula 4, and these things happen, bizarre incidents and bizarre decisions are made every now and then. But my first reaction when the safety car came out was, we may have a lap or two of racing, or race will end behind safety car. And when Max came into the pits for Reds for the final shootout, I knew right there and then that Red Bull had put Lewis in what I would call a Hormel can of ham, no way out if the race was restarted. And you know, Mr. Rogers, I don't watch races with FIA rulebook next to me, but what I have seen is normally, and you see this a lot in Indy cars, when lap cars are allowed to unlap, the race starts after they have caught up and on same lap as the race leader, and then the racing resumes. Had they done that, there would be no more laps to run, and that was pretty obvious. And it was such bizarre stuff that it was going to be 50-50 whether they will have a racing lap or not. Looks like it, they will have a racing lap, and Mike Massey said that they will not allow lap cars to unlap. And I thought they are doing that because they know if they do that, there would be no more laps to run. And then within a few seconds, we're going to allow them to race. And then the race starts. And there was no way Lewis Hamilton with, I think he already had 40 laps on those tires. No way on earth he was going to hold back Max on red tires. And the option of doing a Adelaide 94 or Suzuka or Jerez 97 was not available to Lewis. I'm not saying he would have done that. So he was a sitting duck at that time. And you know, Mr. Rogers, it reminded me right there and then of how NASCAR robbed Mark Martin of victory some years ago in your favorite race, the Daytona 500. In those days in NASCAR, on the final lap, and I don't know what the rules are right now because I don't watch anymore, on the final lap, if there was a crash behind the race leaders, they would throw the caution where the accident was happening, which is what they do. But the leading pack would be allowed to race to the checkered flag, so you don't screw up somebody's victory, you know. But they had their own Massey moment at that time, and Mr. Martin was ganged up on the restart and lost his best chance to win the big race at the Big D. So now there's a lot of talk of Mercedes lost two protests, and now they're going to take it apparently one step higher, maybe not, I don't know. I think Mike Massey, whether the pressure got to him or who sent him a text message, he basically decided, you know, let the show begin. And as he said to Toto Wolff, we went car racing. And I say, went car racing after telling the world lap cars will not be allowed to unlap and then changing the decision. But the issue and bone of contention is not following normal procedure. because that would have resulted in race-ending safety car. And somebody made a very good observation, and he said that, you know, over the years, many Formula One races have been red flagged for a weather issue or whatever issue, and he made a point that if this was during the season, the race most likely would have ended behind the safety car. But since it was World Championship, final race, and I guess everything is now big entertainment, global TV, so Masi had to have his moment. We'll see how it works out. But, you know, I've always believed races should be won on the track, but I am also aware the result of Indy 500 was taken to the courts more than once. And let's see if Toto Wolff will take his case to FIA's Hall of Justice. I just, last 20 minutes, I saw one of the postings that Mercedes will not pursue any further. I don't know. Where do you stand on this?
Well, first, I hope Mercedes, and as a class act, classy company, I'm sure they're going to stop this and move along. They've won the Constructors' Championship. I think that's pretty good. 8 in a row. They're still on top as the best of the best in constructors. But I have a solution, Nasser. Mr. Massey has been talking to the NFL, and what we'll do is we will go into overtime.
Yeah, that's another NASCAR specialty these days.
Exactly. They go into OT, as we call it, down south, and we flip a coin, and doggone it, we get this settled on the track like men. So there you go, Nas. That's my solution. But hey, que será, será. It was all good and fun, and you have to admit, Max, he even felt bad about Lewis losing the championship in such a silly way. And on the other hand, you know, Hamilton could have pitted. He would have kept the lead if he had pitted, maybe not, but that was a chance they took. It's the rolling of the dice. I mean, everybody knew Massey was still in charge. They knew he was in charge, and everybody was on pins and needles waiting for Massey to strike. And boy, did he strike. And the entire Dutch industry is thankful.
As far as Lewis quitting, I don't think that option was... Do you remember some years ago, they made that dumb move and brought Lewis into the pits from the lead with few laps to go of all the places at Monte Carlo. And he was not too thrilled. And I don't think that option was available to them, because had he come in, Max would have taken the lead. And nobody knew whether this was going to end under caution or will they go racing. So he was in a trick bag on that situation. So I think they did the right thing by staying out and keeping the... Because there was going to be... I mean, most likely this race would have really ended under yellow flag under normal circumstances, how they normally play out the races. Like you said, they did not take into account the maximized the Massey moment. And there's a lot of people are saying a lot of things, and I was watching Peter Windsor's video. You know, he knows a lot more about these things than I do. And, you know, there are certain, the rule is very clear that the race will start after the cars have unlapped themselves, and after that lap, the safety car will come in. That is plain simple English in the FIA rule book, or whatever article it is, 14.3. But then Peter Windsor brought out these other lines there, that the race director has the authority to make some decisions. Whatever those decisions are, the authorities are, then, you know, Effley, Bailey, and Johnny Cochran can fight over that. Both are deceased now, so that won't be happening. But you know what I'm saying. But I think, you know, we had a great season. We do not want this championship to be dragged on. Let me tell you something. Some years ago, I believe it was the... I don't know if it was Formula 3 or European Formula 3000, but there was a championship that I think took place between, battle was between one of the Brabham sons, Gary or David Brabham, and I think Alan McNish was involved too. They finished in the first two positions, and it had gone all the way to the highest motorsports legal department, And then after several months, they passed a ruling. We don't want Formula One to be dragged through these muddy waters. Do you?
No, not at all. I want everything to be smoothie, goosey, and wonderful. I mean, in the real world, it's hard, especially when you have such fierce competition.
And you know, the thing is, the best part was Max and Lewis. They did not play Maldonado Tango, okay? But the fight Lewis had with Sergio Perez, man, that was very, very, for me, frisson, chills, man. This is what motor racing is all about, and Max called Checo a legend on the team radio. So, you know, we've had all these great battles. I mean, the battle they had in Brazil, both going off track, I mean, that's what I want. That was like shades of Dijon Prenois. That's what we want. We don't want these, Toto calling, can you please review that? And, you know, what about the two laps earlier? I mean, what is this? You know, this is like children crying. I mean, they should have these rules, you know, that unless you do a boneheaded move by the other guy, if there is collateral damage that the guy drops out, then you give a penalty. But, you know, people like, you know, like Lewis, when Max passed him on the early stages of the race, Lewis crossed the track, sort of like a Zanardi move. Now, both sides can argue, but hey, if he slows down and let Max catch up, that's fine. We don't want a penalty after every two laps, you know. And then these people calling, and I saw some item that apparently Ross Brawn has said that starting next season, team principal will not be able to chat or talk to the race director. And you know, I don't know Mike Massey, but he's not been in the job for a long time. He looks like a young guy for such a heavy duty job. Maybe he needs more people around him. Something needs to be done. What has happened has happened. This should not ever be repeated.
Well, they're going to put Massey in charge of a different department. He will be in charge of actually giving out penalties posthumously.
Well, that's going to be pretty bizarre.
And he's going to start, you know, with some of the early races, and Fangio is going to get some penalties, 10-second grid spot. And that way, it'll keep him busy and out of the limelight.
Interesting.
Thank you. That's what I think about when I'm alone.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what two of the drivers are saying. 2022, easy to understand this. 2022 Mercedes driver George Russell said, "What just happened is absolutely unacceptable. I cannot believe what we've just seen." And this has been the sentiment of, it's pretty much what you said at the top of this recording. And Mario Andretti, I've never seen such an enthusiastic racing fan as Mario Andretti, 78 world champion. He said, and I quote, "What a showdown. I love champions, records and stories that make my heart beat 300 beats a minute." And this is coming from a 82-year-old gentleman. Very impressive. Then he continues, and I quote, "Congratulations, world champion Max Verstappen, and to Lewis Hamilton for an epic season and a story that surely continues," end quote. And this is a very interesting statement, a story that surely continues. You know, Lewis has signed for 2 more years, and new rules coming in, reset, he has a new teammate. So he's going to have basically both, the way I look at it, George Russell coming into Mercedes, both Lewis and Max have an additional headache now. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but I will not be surprised. First, I do expect Mercedes to keep the edge because the engines are pretty much the same and they have not developed this car much. So I think they will retain the edge. And if the edge is such that they can easily win one or two over Max, okay, then I have a feeling that Toto Wolff will make sure that if George Russell is, based on performance, not number two, that he whispers in one ear, "You are one," and in the other goes, "Half." So he's like 1.5. That I think Mercedes will do anything and everything to help Lewis get number 8, especially with what happened now. Do you concur?
I do concur, and shortly George Russell will be getting text messages from Bottas, Irvine, Rubinho. But that's for another year. You know, we got time to talk about those funny little situations that we'll be talking about in 2022. But don't forget the important factor about 2022 and the new cars and machismo.
Yeah, and you know, we are already in mid-December. I think the preseason testing starts within 8 weeks, within 2 months. So pretty soon we will find out where Lewis is compared to George Russell. And it should be very interesting. And of course, you want to see a great battle between all the top-line drivers. Then you mentioned machismo. I think this season will pretty much determine if he will continue in Formula One after 2022. If they are still running over half a second behind Mercedes, then Ollie will see, which he saw quite a bit in 2007, the rear of Lewis Hamilton's wing, which is not a pretty sight for anyone. But I would like to see him. I will be extremely happy, maybe not as much as you, if Nando can get his third. That would be incredible.
That's incredible. It would be.
And you know, since NASCAR is such a big show in the U.S., let me just say this, quote a racing fan on racer.com, what he said about what happened in Abu Dhabi. He wrote, and I quote, "So much outrage, but this is basically every NASCAR race," end quote.
And there you have it. Caution, caution, caution. That's what we need. So Massey's on the right track. I say let's keep it up, and we'll have more laughs in the future. But on that note, why don't we take a quick break, get a breather, get a little ice water and some grenadine, and we'll be back after these brief mellow messages.
Hi, this is Mika Häkkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the guru, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And, you know, apart from Formula 1, Formula 2 championship was also decided. And once again, an Australian was in the spotlight. But just before we go there, you know, just wanted to mention that to cap off our talk about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, it was pole number 10 of the season for Max and 250th front row start for Mercedes as his BFF LCH qualified second. And of course, I liked it very much when Lewis gave Max a hug and his father went to congratulate Max and Jos. That was very nice. And Max, you know, Jos was sitting down. He got up and gave him a hug. But that was nice. We want decency, even if there is too much calamity and confusion on the track. Do you concur, sir?
I do concur. I thought it was very gracious. I thought it was the passing of the baton. I could see Lewis's father telling Josh, "Well, when we won our first world championship, we did this, this, and that, and it was wonderful." So, yeah, I can see him passing along a little advice for the new world champion because, well, I hate to say it, but he could be world champion for years to come, where we once again will fall back and say, "What happened to Lewis and Michael and Kimi and Fernando and Machismo de España?"
Yes, like I said, Max gets a car that is top of the pops, and nobody's going to see him till they see him on the top step of the podium. But, you know, I mean, it took... Look, he's been in Formula One now how many years? 6, 7 years? Sometimes if you don't have... It takes so many years, and Michael took 5 years, I think, before he won his first championship with Ferrari. Lewis had lean years. I will never forget when Sebastian Vettel was doing all the winning, and Lewis was having a hard time. He could get to the podium once in a while, but he was having a hard time winning races, and he was on the podium with Seb as the winner, and David Haas made a comment, "Lewis must be wondering, Sebastian is having the career I was supposed to have. Because I think at one time the score was Sebastian 4 championships, Lewis 1. Right?
Yes, sir.
And it can turn the same way for Max also. So very interesting times, Mr. Rogers. And I just hope we're going to have a race in Miami. We're going to have a race in Austin. And I'm hoping that I can make a quick dash to north of the border and do the Montreal race also. So I would like to get Mr. Rogers at least 6 to 8 races when I'm fully retired. And that will make me extremely, extremely delighted. Okay, sir. So we're going to move now to Formula 2. Okay. Well, this year, because of this COVID nonsense, they were doing 3 races a weekend, 2 sprint races, and the feature race on Sunday. Next year, they will go back to the normal format, sprint race on Saturday. Sunday will be the feature race. Okay. So the finale took place, of course, at Yas Marina. Aussie mate Oscar Piastri did a triple play, winning 3rd championship in as many seasons. And that's what really is required to get into Formula 1. Unfortunately, even then he cannot get a seat because some people have very deep pockets. Last year he won the Formula 3, also in his rookie season. Very, very impressive. And prior to that he was Formula Renault Euro Cup champion. He is managed by his compadre, Mark Webber, and Mr. Piastri comes from Melbourne, Australia, not Melbourne, Florida. Sunday's, he went on to win the feature race also, which he started from pole position. So very, very impressive performance this year from Oscar. Now, 3 races, we had global winners. First sprint race was won by Indian driver Jahan Daruvala from Mumbai, and he's also known as Daruvala. And the second sprint race was won by Chinese driver Guan Yu Zhu, who is now headed to Formula Uno, replacing Senior Giovinazzi. Okay, sir, Abu Dhabi, Yas Marina, it also saw sayonara to Honda and Kimi. Long time ago in Mexico, 1965, Honda won the season finale to record their first Grand Prix win with California driver Richie Ginther. And here we are today. Another sayonara from the Tokyo-based company. One can only hope they will come back soon, especially if Yuki-san start winning racing. What could be better than their own rising sun winning the championship powered by Honda? Hi! Hi! That's what I would say. And sir, on the other hand, for the second sayonara, it was in Albert Park 2001, 3 mega talents made their Grand Prix debut. Machismo, the full Monty, and little Kimi. And here we are today. Nando is a legend in his own lifetime. Monty won races at Monza, Monte Carlo, Silverstone, and the Indy 500. Not once, but twice. Kimi became the Frank Sinatra of Formula One, doing things his way. Now the summer wind has caught up to him.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.
And 2021 may not have been a very good year, but he is leaving behind a big legacy, highlight of which was coming from nowhere to win the 2007 championship in his first year with Ferrari. The Kimi of McLaren days was like the Senna of McLaren Honda days, supremely talented but operating very differently. He replaced Michael Schumacher at Ferrari and famously said when asked about the Germans' work ethics, "I do things my way." He sure did, winning first time out on a prancing horse like Alonso, like Andretti and Arnage, which was very impressive. Kimi came into Formula One with Sauber and went out with the same Swiss team. They had the perfect fit to size and style farewell message for the driver on their car, which I'm sure you saw, saying, "Dear Kimi, we will leave you alone now." I have a feeling the Raikkonen name will return to winning ways soon in the form of his son, Robin Raikkonen. We wish Kimi all the best in retirement and hope to see Robin fly high in the near future. Sir, would you have something to say about Kimster?
The Kimster was fantastic. You know, I miss his McLaren days because those were the craziest with the fastest. I mean, like you said, people forget Fernando won the championship in 05 and 06, but Kimi was right there tagging along in that championship. Those were great days. So machismo, so much excitement. I'll miss Kimi. I'll miss the whole era of Kimi and all the machismos.
It was my mistake. I just was looking something else and didn't really expect that the Ferrari was slowing down so much in the middle of the corner. So I touched a little bit, but the car was still working well. So
yeah, you know, when he joined Ferrari, he was asked about McLaren and how he would describe Ron Dennis. And you remember what he said. He's a control freak. And you know, Martin Brundle had driven for Ron Dennis also. So I asked him if Kimi was right. He says, no, absolutely, he is wrong. Ron is not a control freak. He's a super control freak. So interesting days and comments we have seen over the years. Okay, sir, I have to say this very sad news over the past weekend. Al Unser Sr., another great legend of American racing, is now gone. Earlier this year, his brother Bobby passed away. A Big Al was a big success at the Brickyard, winning the Indy 500 four times, last time in a year-old car that was parked in a hotel lobby only a week or two before the 1987 race. And I watched this race, which was completely dominated by Mario Andretti in his Chevy Power Lola, I believe it was, and then he had a small part, $4 part break, very late in the race. And Al Unser was at one time two laps down, and he came to win. So talk about perseverance. He also won the Daytona 24 Hours and carried on a family tradition by winning the famous Pikes Peak. And of course, you know, Mr. Roger, if you recall, once upon a time, in the very early days of F1 Weekly podcasting, we went to Sears Point, and there was Eddie Cheever and Johnny Rutherford and Al Unser Sr., and we, you know, did our usual, just walked up to them and started doing a chat. So good memories, very sad news, but again, these things happen. And of course, the whole family came from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And his son, of course, also had big success at the Indy 500. Anything else, sir, you want to talk about before we say our own sayonara for this week?
Well, what a great world championship it was. Of course, we will be doing the season in review in a few weeks. We'll take a little break in a few weeks. We've got the holidays in a few weeks. So I just say let's mellow out for about 95 days, and then we'll be back talking about Formula One because Fernando will be P1 in testing right away.
And what about the race?
The race was bizarre, but you know what?
No, you said Fernando will be P1 in testing. So what when the racing starts, 2022, where will he be?
Oh, right there, pole position in Melbourne. It's going to be exciting. Believe it or not, Fernando is back in town.
That he is. I'm very happy, man. Carlos Sainz was third in the race. And you know, very surprisingly, he finished in the championship ahead of Charles Leclerc. For me, you know, Carlos Sainz, and I said this before also, for me, this has been the most impressive driver this season. He has carried on his business, quietly coming into the house of Leclerc, and done a very, very good job. What Lewis has done and what Max has done, I'm not much impressed because due to the sheer brilliance and mega, mega talent, what they are doing is what I expect. You know, it's just like what you would expect from a Senna or a Schumacher. Second is a very bad day for them. So my vote for most impressive driver this year goes to Carlos Sainz Jr. What say you, Senor?
I absolutely agree. And I don't know if you noticed, but of course it's warm in Saudi Arabia and it was humid.
It is? No, I did not notice that, Clark.
Yes, I did. I mean, didn't you? I had the AC on full blast. But everybody's perspiring. Max, you know, it's over. Getting that towel and getting all dried up. And so is Lewis. And Carlos Sainz is fresh, ready to go. He's got his hat on, no perspiration at all. It was almost like he just finished a pickleball match with his neighbor. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm really impressed with Carlos Sainz. He's impressive. He's on the podium at the last race. Like you said, he beat Leclerc in the points. Ferrari adore him. So Ferrari has got a great driver lineup, and we should see wonderful things in 2022.
Yeah, but you know, even though he's a Spanish, Latin flavor, he did not come to Ferrari with a big oversized family-sized jar of hot picante sauce. You know what? You know where this is going.
I don't know what you're talking about, but sometimes some drivers do need a little extra picante in their sauce.
Yes. Yes.
That's why we have the Ortega burger.
Yes, but then, you know, some drivers come with a big size of molten salt, and salt in the wound is never a good combo.
Never, never. But we'll be talking about this race for many, many months, and it's going to be interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing Toto calm down and in his mankini with Flavio in Sardinia.
Yeah, yeah, we have to move on. And this was definitely, I would say, probably the best ever season I can recall. I mean, normally we had super domination. We've seen with many drivers. We have, I mean, there was intense rivalry between Mansell and Piquet, but slowly and surely one person was getting the edge, which is what normally happens. I mean, if you look at the season between Rosberg and Lewis, that was very, very intense. But late in the season, Nico Rosberg was very happy to finish second because he knew if he finished second in four races, he will be world champion. And this season was incredible, probably the very best we have ever seen. And not just the season, but these two drivers, man. Now, one has to keep in mind, Lewis is at the tail end of his racing life. And to be able to, I mean, when he passed this guy, Max at the start, Max on softer tires, I really, really thought he had jumped the start. And then he was able to keep the car ahead and just... These are just supremely talented drivers, and I'm just very happy we can watch them compete like they do. And I hope, hopefully, they will do it for many years. And it's just a matter of time before Lewis retires. Then probably we'll see Max putting heads with Charles Leclerc or Carlos Sainz. And there is, you know, both in the Max Verstappen, I should say, Verstappen and Sainz camp, there is an old score to settle from their Toro Rosso days, if you know what I mean. And the performance he has put in this year tells me that if he's in a competitive car, if he and Charles Leclerc are in a competitive car, they will do to Max what Lewis was what Max was doing to Lewis this year. So we have a lot of great expectations. Hope you, both of us are around to see this into the 2030s. It's a push, it's a shove, but we may surprise people.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Any thoughts on Jean Todt?
Well, he is going, and well, the thought is there is no rumors floating around. He may come back to Ferrari as a consultant. I will always remember Jean Todt from a picture I saw in a magazine, 1973 East African Safari, Peugeot 504 making a fast turn, dirt flying everywhere, and it says, Sweden's Ove Andersson and his co-driver Jean Todt in their Peugeot 504. I think they finished third. So that's my eternal memory of Jean Todt. And then I remember him being at Peugeot sports car program, and they were doing a lot of winning. And the Ferrari was just a totally different program. But I have to say, man, I don't know if I should use this word, but the organization he had at Ferrari, Michael Schumacher, Rory Byrne, Ross Brawn, that was just, I mean, if that was a dream team, that was it.
It was indeed, Nas. It was indeed with all those memories. So why don't we go into famous last words and our musical Mondial?
Well, I've been so shell-shocked from what happened on Sunday, I have not had a chance to look at some stuff that we can use for famous last words. Why not famous last words from the host himself today on the season?
Yeah, well, I say go Max. I loved the ending. I thought it was exciting and wonderful because, once again, even though with the changes on the track, which were good changes, let's face it, that was a boring race until Massey's hit the button. I don't know if it's the Max button or the Lewis button, but it was a processional race. Abu Dhabi is still stinky. And thankfully, we had some excitement. Of course, it was Goofy, Mickey Mouse, and I really expected somebody to go up to Max Verstappen and say, "You've just won the world championship. Where are you going now?" And it never happened. So that was a big opportunity that Disney World missed.
Yes, sir. And, you know, speaking of musical mondial, let's invite ABBA to the Palatial Studios. They have a song for the moment. Thank you for listening.
Good night, Nasser. Good night, Stephen. Good night, David.
Good night, Clark.
I don't want to talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I've played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more ace to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small beside the victory. It feels the same when she calls your name. Somewhere deep inside, you must know I miss you. But what can I say? Rules must be obeyed.